man is not as stupid as we would like to believe he is. Sometimes, you know, he would like to believe things, but you have a consciousness in all human beings, and once you reach that, and this is mainly what I try to do. I'm a social doctor, and my job is to inform where the cancer is.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me.
This is Andromeda 21, a series of conversations, rap sessions, with speakers from the 1971 Afro-American Culture Lecture Series held on the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus. The purpose of these programs is to inform and inspire, to spread the realization that black is beautiful. The title of this program refers to the Ethiopian princess Andromeda, who, like us, was in chains, became free, and later took her place among the stars.
I wish you could know what it means to be me. Then you'd see and agree that every man should be free.
I wish. The guest today is Mr. Richard Gregory. I like to think that you've lived at least three lives in your 38 years. I call one Gregory the comedian, two Gregory the saint, and now Greg in transition as I look at your face, in transition to heights that I can't determine at this moment. So let me ask you this. We're on news now, and you have a thing about our news media. How is it that so many Americans can be so misinformed for so long, Dick?
Well, I think in a free democratic society where from the time you're a little kid to the time you're dead, we talk about the freedoms that you have in a country, but we never exercise these freedoms, you know. In America, we are more interested in money than we are in a democracy, so naturally you have to lose one. And so consequently, the AP sends out a story, and nobody checks. Plus, today, I guess you can blame a lot of it on the news media itself. In the 20s and in the 30s, the news media prided itself with following up a story, going in, doing the small incidentals of a story, but yet, you know, proving out mistakes and what have you. Also, in a racist society, as this country is, if you white, we'll take your word for it. If you black, we'll check it. I mean, they check. You know, everybody is talking about this beautiful story in the New Yorker, how it was proved that 28 Black Panthers wasn't killed. But nobody, you know, will say, why did every newspaper in America print that 28 Black Panthers was killed? But because Charles Gary, who is white, said it. But had a black Panther said it, it would have been challenged right then and there. And so consequently, you know, it is the racist society that picked up what a white man said about Black Panthers being killed, and without no challenge whatsoever. And so consequently, when you see that, you know, we are living in a racist country, and the press only reflects that country. You know, the press reflects the laziness in our interest in a democracy. Look at a newspaper, and almost, you know, a third to two-thirds of that newspaper is advertisement, you know. And that's the only reason the paper's here, not to inform. And this is why you go around the world and find people that read papers, you know. They are more informed about what goes on in the world than Americans are.
I believe you listen to shortwave radio, is that right?
Right, yes. Uh-huh.
And what kinds of things do you find there as opposed to American radio?
Well, you find tremendous news items that never get through, you know. Matter of fact, you can learn more from reading the Black Panther newspaper and the Black Muslim newspaper. First, you got to understand they slant it.
Okay.
But once you understand this, there's more in the Black Panther newspaper and the Black Muslim newspaper pertaining to world, international affairs, international relationship. You know, it's very scary to know how many people in America do not know the difference between a Arab and an Egyptian. You know, an Egyptian is the lightest African on the continent of Africa, where Arab is an Asian. And I mean, you just cannot believe that out of all of the press in this country pertaining to, especially when NASA was alive, of the effect that NASA had over the Arabs, you know, and the bad blood that came out with the Arabs selling black folks into slavery, and then NASA being able to have this much force and control over the Arabs. This was what the whole world marveled over. And you go all the way around the world, man, and you find people that understand this. And so consequently, you know, it's frightening. You know, when I went to Hong Kong, you know, and you read the American press where, you know, the red Chinese are starving to death. And that's another thing. See, after you leave America, there's no such thing as red China. You know, there's not one map on the face of this earth that says red China. It's China. Now, the very interesting thing is we do not call Russia red Russia. You see, we don't take liberties with white folks. You know, we call it the USSR. We don't, you know, anything we don't like is not white. We put a color to it. There's a Muslim religion in America, and we take the liberty of calling it black Muslim. And so consequently, what happens is when I go to Hong Kong, I find out that if it were not for China, that sends 98% of all the food and water that Hong Kong gets, Hong Kong would have to fold up. And so when you sit and you look, and you just have to believe that these stories are deliberate. You just cannot believe that our press can make these total mistakes over and over and over and over.
And in addition, Dick, to being against, say, black people or Chinese people, the press also misinforms the masses of whites. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Could you give any examples of that, where they are misinformed and then acting upon this misinformation, they do very unjust things?
Let me give you a good example. The Capitol was blown up, an explosion in the Capitol not too long ago. Now, there was a call that came in. But before we get to the call, every newspaper in America carried a story. The Capitol was blown up in protest to the Laotian invasion, right?
Right.
The call did not say that. The call said, this is a protest of Nixon's last decision. Now, the last decision that alienated Americans in this country before that bomb was the decision against the construction workers. And that is very, very important. And all at once, this is interpreted that it was against the law. The caller didn't say that. Now, that's very important, because if you know anything about Nazi Germany and know how Hitler came to power, Hitler burnt down the Reichstag. The Reichstag was the Senate. This was a Senate that was a bomb exploded in, and I think if you look at it, we might be following the same pattern. The next day, McCormick and Congressman Gerald Ford and the people that know the Senate building said it was an inside job.
Wow.
Said it was totally impossible for someone that didn't have a total working knowledge of the Senate, because, as the paper said, a washroom. But this washroom was not exposed to John Doe public. And so you take a little small thing like this, and it gets way out of proportion, and because of the press and the irresponsible press in this country, we are headed for a dictatorship, and it can happen overnight. For instance, you can be picked up by the FBI, and the FBI will file a story. Had black power literature in his car, man. And every newspaper will take that and run it. And in the minds of whites, they will assume, man, well, like, here is a radical, militant black cat that hates me, because nobody dares explain what is black power literature. But these cats that give it out, for instance, when Angela Davis was arrested. She was arrested with a black cat by the name of Poindexter. And the only information the FBI gave out on Poindexter, it said he was a rich black man from Chicago. Now, what difference do his money make when a man is arrested as far as the FBI report? All you're supposed to do is give out a criminal record. One, Poindexter is not rich. I live in Chicago. I know all the rich black folks in Chicago. So now, why would the FBI deliberately plant something like this and every paper picked it up without a challenge to it? And so consequently, I feel that the press have gotten us in a lot of trouble in this country as far as we believe the press is free. And the press get a lot of planted stories. A lot of stories come out of the government that's planted. Yeah. And it's very vicious what happens in this
country. You're a serious dude, man. Let me ask, now, do you ever become dismayed sometimes when the serious message, which is the essence of your life as I understand it, is sometimes misunderstood because of the comedy?
No. I think my record of how many times a man put me in jail leaves a clear record that he know when I'm playing and he know when I'm not playing, you know.
I got that. I was thinking of the audience sometimes, or the young people. Do they misunderstand that, or do they see where you're coming from?
They see. I mean, people, you know, man is not as stupid as we would like to believe he is. Sometimes, you know, he would like to believe things, but you have a consciousness in all human beings, and once you reach that, and this is mainly what I try to do. I'm a social doctor. And my job is to inform where the cancer is. My job is not to talk about the good features about America. See, a man's good, healthy points have never killed him. A man has not died from being too healthy. You know, so if you go to a doctor and you have beautiful teeth and beautiful gums and you have cancer and he's so busy telling you about your gums and your teeth that he forgets to tell you about the cancer, you're going to die.
Right.
And so consequently, as a social doctor, you really can't have no hang-ups. You move in, you examine the patient, you say what a cancer is, and you move out. It is not your job to decide how serious this individual takes it. The important thing is after you finish examining the patient, I know one thing. If ever he see it again, he'll know what it looked like. And it's very important to deal with truth in a very unethical country. So if it ever happens again, he'll know what it looked like. You know, people get robbed, and the cop will come up and say, what did he look like? And I say, well, I don't know, man. He put a double-barrel shotgun in the window, and I was too nervous and too frightened. Say, well, what did he talk like? Say, I don't know. Say, was it a man or a woman? Say, I don't know. Say, if you ever see him again, will you recognize him? Say, I'll never forget him as long as I live. And truth in a very unethical country like this has that same power. And if ever you see it again, you recognize it. And this is the most important thing to me as I go around and talk to various people.
As a social doctor, it seems as if most of your clients are the young. Is that right?
Yeah, I choose to work. I guess it's because I was an athlete in my early life, and I learned the true meaning of good form means maximum result with minimum loss of effort. And all my life I tried to carry that. When I had me a job as a janitor, I tried to get as much with that one stroke of the broom as I could. I didn't believe in, you know, just messing around.
I'm hip, man. As a waiter, I worked as a waiter on the railroad, and you got every move has to count.
Right.
And or else you'd be on the floor.
Right. And so in dealing, in as far as I'm concerned, with good form, maximum results with minimum loss of effort, I feel dealing with the young kids, because all of the dishonesties have them sit in, all of the passion, money, embracing have them sit in.
Explain this for me, Greg. You said to the young people, you have a job of giving sanity to an insane America.
Well, the country's crazy, and the young kids are the psychiatrists, and they got to put America down on the couch, and they got to slow up and say, whoa, shut up, and we're going to tell you what's wrong with you.
You said that the young force us to live in reality as opposed to the myths we've been living by. Could you explain that?
Yeah.
And maybe mention your new book, too.
For years, we in this country have lived in the myth. And now for the first time, these young kids is forcing us into reality. And my new book that just came out is called No More Lies, The Myth and Reality of American History. You know, the myth that we live in this country of the Puritan pilgrims and the great freedom, democracy-loving cats, that 90% of everybody that signed the Declaration of Independence owned slaves. And when you understand that, then it's not hard to understand why on July the 4th, 1776, when them cats met in Philadelphia and hit the Liberty Bell, it cracked from the bottom all the way up to the top, man. And anytime we talk about liberty in America, we got a cracked bell, so we should have known something was wrong. I mean, George Washington owned slaves. Matter of fact, in his last will and testament, his will was to Martha that after she died, all his slaves was to be released, except one, that little light mulatto out there, which was obvious that was his son, you know, because it went on to say, you know, how much silver he was to be given. Now, the myth is, especially for black folks, that all my life, man, I've been celebrating George Washington's birthday, and I do not appreciate celebrating the birthday of a slave master. You know, the myth of the Emancipation Proclamation, you know, I mean, in this country, black and white have led to believe that, with admiration, I'm led to believe that Lincoln freed me, and with passionate hate, there's Southern whites and Northern whites that resent Lincoln for that, and Lincoln didn't have anything to do with it, you know. We do not teach in this country that what really freed me was the 13th Amendment. The Emancipation Proclamation did not pertain to the North, where there was 800,000 slaves living. And if you look at the date of the Emancipation Proclamation, you realize that the South had already seceded from the Union, which means Lincoln had no jurisdiction over the South. Plus, the Emancipation Proclamation wasn't nothing but a war act, which meant once the war was over, the act wasn't no good. And so all at once, you know, a whole nation's educational books is keyed to a myth that Abraham Lincoln freed me, and as long as you can keep me dealing with emancipation, you keep me from the word liberation. And that's something nobody ever did for black folks and poor folks and oppressed people in America, was liberated us. And so they constantly running down a game on me by being emancipated. You know, in doing the research for this book, one of the things I wanted to do was go and check the Mason-Dixie line. You know, this was a thing that always hung me up. I'd always been told that there's a group of white folks that live on this side of the line, that they're a bunch of racist, bigot freaks, and there's a group that live on this side, and they're all right. And I always had a feeling that anything south of Canada was Mason-Dixie, you know. And it's very interesting how we got a Mason-Dixie line. We had two states that was arguing over their boundaries, the state of Pennsylvania and the state of Maryland. And so they brought in two astronomers, man, one named Charlie Mason. Two astronomers, Charlie Mason and Jeremiah Dixon, to draw the boundary lines to separate Pennsylvania from Maryland. That's all it's all about, man. That's how the name was set up, Mason and Dixon.
And we've been fooled all these years.
So we've been fooled to believe everybody on that side of the line is racist and everybody on this side is not. It had nothing to do.
You know what happens when you take the city of New Orleans, man. It gets to a certain point, the porter goes through and say, God's land.
Right, man. Yeah.
And we think that if you move the screens back,
right,
you think you're in the promised land,
too. That's
right.
And so consequently, these are the myths that the young kids are challenging today. They're challenging all of the myths. They're challenging the fact that 44 million Americans go to bed every night hungry. You know, they're challenging the fact that we have, you know, Chicanos, Mexicans in this country, and poor black folks and poor white folks that's harvesting the crop in America and dying from malnutrition. These are all of the things that they challenge. And they're saying, don't blame it on the communists, man. I'm not going to let you do that no more.
This is part of what you mentioned, the parable about education, which was a program, it seems, to keep America dumb. Is that correct?
Yeah, you have a program. You see, one, you have to understand that educators know, and those that don't know should know, that a kid's capacity for learning opens up at 2.5, and it tends to close at 5. And I do not believe that there's an accident that the laws in this country of putting your kids in school is at 5 years old. And yet all of the wealthy and the better off people put their kids in preschool, which is 2.5, you know. And so consequently, I don't believe this is an accident at all. And I believe, you know, that in this country, they do a very beautiful thing for a capitalistic system. You know, they teach you in this country how to make a living, and they do not teach you how to live. And, you know, one of the horrors to me is our educational system. You know, I'm told if I go to Harvard, I have a much better education than if I went to the University of Nebraska. And if I go to the University of Nebraska, I'm supposed to have a much better education than if I go to the University of Mississippi. And yet, if I go to Harvard and ask for change for a dollar and I want in pennies, they give me 100 pennies. Mm-hmm. If I go to Nebraska and ask for change for a dollar, I get 100 pennies. And if I go to Mississippi, now it's very strange that we have our system for counting money more evenly than we do our educational system. I mean, it's just totally insane that I would go 4 years to college in Mississippi and be told that I am not as educated if I had spent my 4 years at Harvard University. Right. And there's no other country in the world you can go to, man. You cannot go to Russia. You cannot go to any civilized country, man. You can't go to Germany. You can't go to Tokyo. You can't go to China and be told that this is our better school. They say this is a much better school in engineering than this school over here. But the main thing is you have a tremendous education when you leave. And I think this is one of the fallacies of our educational system, that we have certain little cracks that we breed good fools to help run our trick. That's why all them weird, beady-eyed cats from Harvard look alike and talk alike. You know, how can you get a whole school full of people, man, that sound the same way, unless something is wrong, because you're making machines out of them. And then we got little transcripts where we can go and look at the transcripts and say, oh, Harvard, straight A's, I want him. You know, but the cats that make the straight A's never own the business. They always end up working for the system. And so consequently, you know, somewhere down the line, you know, this have to be challenged, and we have to set up an educational system that's relevant to the needs of the people. I got to have a system that will teach me how to live and not teach me how to make a living. If I know how to live, then making a living is the easiest thing in the world to do. If a system teach me how to make a living, then this is why we get so many Americans that die at 31 from heart attacks. They know brilliantly how to make a living, yeah, but they don't know how to live.
So again, the emphasis has been misplaced in the eyes of white America. They are worried so much about us, and they don't realize that they're getting screwed by the educational system too. Is that right?
Yeah, but see, in a racist system, you know, there are things that happen to everybody in the system. You see, there's no way humanly possible I can hold my foot on you and not have my movements affected. See, I'm not going on the top of the mountain with my foot on you. And every time I move, you move. And this is it. But the interesting thing is you in a better position than I am, because the cat that's below me next to my foot is in a better position to snatch me down than I'm in a position to keep him down.
Seems like you believe, I didn't mean to cut you off, but
right, yeah.
Seems like you really believe America is really hep in theory, but in practice it's no good. And you mentioned a number of inconsistencies in America. Could you mention some of those?
Well, I think the most important inconsistency is the Indian. The Indian in this country is, you know, one of the horrors of this country. When you stop and think that the average educational mean for the Indian is 5.5 grades, when you just stop and think that the Indian has a 60 to 90% dropout of school. When you stop and think that in America, we spend like 60% less on Indians per pupil than we do on anybody else. When you realize that in America, the Indian tuberculosis rate, death rate, is 500 times higher than the national death rate of tuberculosis. The problem of the Indians in health, that most of them have to go 100 miles to see a doctor, and when they get there, they got a line that might have to wait all day. And so when you look at all of the inconsistencies, and when you look at the inconsistencies of the way we fight wars, that now we've been told that if you fly to another man's country in your mighty Air Force and your bombers and bum the hell out of him, as long as you don't use ground troops, you're not classed as an invader.
Sounds like we're getting into 1984 and doublethink, Dick, where people have two contrary ideas and believe them both. And do you feel that America, there are many Americans who actually believe in these inconsistencies?
Well, yeah, and I think they've done a good job to make Americans believe in these inconsistencies. And we are getting into 1984. This is what all these numbers are all about. This is what the zip code is all about. The zip code puts you over in, not only into the city, into there, but into a little pocket. You know, every time you look around, you got a number. Every time you look around, somebody has a file on you, you know. And so consequently, when you look at the census ticket, the census ticket come to your house and ask you, oh, you don't need no, ask me no questions, man, to count me, you know. And what I got to get involved with all these other questions for? And so consequently, when you sit and look that, you know, of the amount of money and the amount of energy that's put in to perpetrate these myths, I mean, it's just totally unbelievable what happens in this country with the myths. And then when you deal with the reality, then you got most of the people don't believe you, and but the information is here, and I blame us as citizens of a country that take the word that it's a free society without going and doing the basic research. And I think this is why they can do these things, because they completely relaxed us. You know, we have a lot of people in this country that's afraid to wear a beard or a mini skirt or let their hair grow, and they react to it with, I wouldn't want to look like that anyway. Basically because we have decided in America that morality is nothing more but a Brooks Brothers suit and a clean shaven face and a haircut once a week. And when a man don't get his hair cut once a week and don't shave and don't put on a Brooks Brothers suit, then we don't know if he's a moral, honest, ethical man or not, because we have phony standards. And when the little young kids came through and shattered that standard and say morality will no longer be a Brooks Brothers suit and a clean-shaven face and a haircut once a week, that meant morality in America would no longer come from without, but would come from within. And so now you got a whole lot of people that know if they wore a beard to work, they'd lose their job. If they went in a pair of overalls, they would lose their job. And so the horror of this makes them reach up and get something else and constantly tell themselves they do not want to look like this, that looking like this is bad, you see.
And it really blows the minds of the establishment, doesn't it?
Sure, because you see, if you picked up a paper and read, like we do in America so many times, that a kid got kicked out of high school because he refused to cut his hair, that a woman was sent home off the job because she had a miniskirt on. If you read that in Moscow, Russia, a kid was kicked out of school because he wouldn't get a haircut, or a woman was sent home from the factory because she had a miniskirt on, we'd snub our shoulders and say, that's communism for you. But when it happens right here in America, we find excuses and leeways to deal with it, you know.
And in spite of all these inconsistencies, you still have faith in the young, Dick, is that right?
Yeah, well, the young is tomorrow. You know, there have been nations that have reached a degenerate level that ours have reached. The Romans, the Greeks, the Egyptians got so degenerate they was too strong to be destroyed from without and crumbled from within. But it was the young people in the world that keeps the banner going.
You said that the answer isn't dynamite and guns, but something else. Well, what is that
something
else? No, the
answer is honest, ethical statesmanship ability, particularly in America. The only thing this country cannot match the young kids with is honest ethics. We, for every stick of dynamite they get, we got missiles. For every bullet they can come up, we can come up with a tank. They proved it with the Great Boycott. They didn't use dynamite. They took an honest ethics, and for 5 years they stood in front of their supermarket with a quiet dignity and just said, please don't buy California grapes. And they looked so beautiful and looked so strong, we stopped buying California grapes. And that was one of the greatest victories in the history of this country as far as labor was concerned, was the Great Boycott, because organized labor was not behind them. The older folks in this country was not behind them. And so consequently, 6 months before the kids won that Great Boycott, Dick Nixon bought $189 million worth of California grapes and shipped them to Vietnam,
wow,
trying to break that boycott, and the young kids was too beautiful. And not, they didn't blow up the grape vineyards. They just stood there and held their thing, and they won that victory.
I'd like to talk to you forever, Dick, but we have to stop now. And we've been listening to Dick Gregory, the apostle to the young, whose message to them is to stay as honest and decent and ethical as they are. And I think the more we are exposed to Dick Gregory, the more we are inclined to do that.
This has been Andromeda 21, another in the series of conversations with speakers from the 1971 Afro-American Culture Lecture Series held on the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus. Your host for this series is Hank Parker, instructor in the Department of Classics at the University of Illinois. That's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart. I wish you could know what it means to be me. Then you'd see and agree that every man should be free. Andromeda 21 was produced and directed by Louise Geislers for WILL, the radio service of the University of Illinois in Urbana.